The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
And joining us this week to bring us their winners and sinners and their anything else you have in yourself are Ger Gilroy from Off The Ball and Megan Scully, host of 28 Ways to Save the World and freelance journalist. Good evening to you both.
Good evening.
I will come to you first, Ger, your winner this week.
So this is the cases that have been taken against Meta and actually all of the social media companies. There was two separate cases this week. There was one in New Mexico, and then there was another one taken by a plaintiff against the social media organizations. Google are arguing that YouTube isn't social media, by the way, and they shouldn't have been included, but they were included, and they were found guilty, and they've been ordered to pay damages to this woman who is now 20, who claims that as a teenager, the social media companies used technology that was totally addictive and that they knew it was addictive and it was damaging to her mental health. So this is a case that's obviously been ongoing for a long time. The fact that they won the case is being seen as precedent for thousands of other cases which are actually also being taken.
Possibly millions of other cases, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I just think it's really interesting that, like, we've been talking about this in the abstract about the, in Ireland's potential social media ban. There obviously are some social media bans going on at the moment around the country for under, around the world for under 16s. Keir Starmer is saying that it's not a case of if there's going to be a change. There will be a change in the UK, and they're working through a process to see how that would actually look. But I think what the case has established, and it was interesting that TikTok and one of the other social, Snap, settled in advance, correctly, I think, identifying that they didn't want the massive publicity of losing the case. They were like, look, whatever, you know, we'll put aside a certain amount of money. But the tactics used in this case are very similar to what they used against Big Tobacco. And I just feel like what we knew about the phones being totally addictive, what I am totally addicted to my phone, and I'm seeing that I'm passing this on, like, in, you know, it's like a monkey see, monkey do, and like, please don't repeat the mistakes that I've made. So I just thought it was really interesting this week that they've lost that battle.
I think the implications from this are enormous, and we, like, you're quite right. I had kind of a split brain on this when I was looking at it. I was kind of going, it was almost inconceivable to me that we could take on the huge social media platforms on this, because we kind of, because we have consistently failed to come to grips with them, or we have always been behind the curve chasing them in terms of regulation and everything else. I kind of thought it was almost like a done deal that they kind of did what they want. But then on the other hand, as I was listening to the evidence from the case, I was going, it's completely obvious, isn't it? That the algorithm is designed to be addictive in the exact same way. As you mentioned, tobacco, and I actually had made a little note when you were speaking, Big Tobacco. Tobacco obviously is just innately addictive. It wasn't made addictive, although, you know, you might argue that marketing and all sorts of things. But that's what they've turned their product into. They've turned it into something that fires dopamine and that we keep going back for more and we behave as if we're addicted to it. And why shouldn't it be held to account in the same way that Big Tobacco has been, or in the same way we put regulations on things like alcohol in terms of advertising? We put all sorts of regulations on alcohol, and you might actually argue that alcohol is less addictive than tobacco, or indeed social media. I feel as if we've reached a tipping point with this case, that they're going to have to start behaving differently, these big platforms, and that surely, I don't know, Megan, what do you think? That can only be for the good of society and humanity.
Absolutely. Like, I even find for myself, I have to put on, like, warning signs or, like, timers on my social media apps so that I don't only use them for a certain amount of times a day. Now, obviously, I can override that the whole time, which I do, but then it is kind of checking my screen time every week and taking a step back on, wow, look how high this is. Mm-hmm. And I do try to kind of almost limit myself, but it's actually something I have to kind of work towards. It's not something I can just do. It's something I actually now have to implement into my everyday, where I am trying to like step away from my phone. And I know people, I don't smoke, but I know people who have given up cigarettes in the past, and they've said, you know, trying the process of trying to get over the addiction is so challenging. And I that's the same way with social media now and our phones. It's you nearly have to change your habits. It's become a habit, an addiction. It's constantly on. Like mine is here in my lap right now, and I wish I didn't bring it in now that we're talking about this. But it's just, yeah, becoming aware of usage and what we're consuming all the time. Like you mentioned the algorithm, and I just think like sometimes it knows exactly what I want to look at, and it's just throwing me up. And then like that, time just goes away and suddenly you're lying in bed and you're scrolling and you should be asleep.
I know. And it does, you know, that expression, it comes between me and my sleep. There's nothing that comes between us and our sleep nowadays more than those apps and those social media things. I used to use the thing you're talking about where I'd say I'd set myself this optimistic goal. Yeah. I'll only do 40 minutes a day. I stopped doing it, yeah, because it was pointless, because I literally just overrode it. I overrode it by breakfast time practically. It was actually, it's embarrassing in a way, isn't it?
Well, look, the whole point about personal responsibility is we're adults. We should definitely, you know, use whatever tools are available to us to stop this. But teenage brains aren't fully formed and they're continuing to grow. And like I don't know if you've been seeing the impact that AI is having on people's brains and their ability to cognitively reason after like months of using it versus people who haven't been using it. There are these long form studies that are beginning to emerge and they don't look really good.
No,
they look
it'd be like as if we no longer used our own arms and we had a robot that used arms for us instead, and we were then surprised that our arms became kind of weak.
It's like they're dead.
I think it's as basic as that, isn't it?
And I just feel like they knew. They continue to make it. There was a great whistleblower, the documentaries that have been made about this. And you see those clips of them that are like on the social media platform that you're doom scrolling on going, this is bad, you should stop this. And I'm like, yeah, okay, flick, 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 flick. So I just feel the money will obviously be something that they pay attention to, because if it is thousands of cases multiplied by millions of dollars, they're still so wealthy and so rich that they will be able to...
Well, they can adapt. But if there's anything put between them and making their product so addictive that none of us really, I mean, there is obviously personal responsibility and exercising free will and all of that, but that kind of goes out the window when they have been designed to target like little impulses in your brain so effectively.
And they've hacked that brilliantly. And like, I'm sure this technology could be used for good. I don't know what that use is, but I'm sure if all these brilliant minds could put their...
social connectivity in some manner or form. Megan, your winner this week?
Yeah, this is something that I came across today about CIE's plans to redevelop Houston and Connolly Station, and basically to have like a connection between them. So buses and trains, and you'll be able to kind of more freely, I suppose, travel between the two of them. There's also potentially a new DART station coming to Houston, new bridges over the Liffey, more cycle lanes, 5,000 bike spaces, a 250-bed hotel and 1,000-plus residential units. And I think there'll be also shopping units as well. So I just think it's great, mainly for the public transport side of things, because I do find when I was living back in Galway, if I was coming up to Dublin for work for a day or two, I'd get as far as Houston, and suddenly I was still quite, like, even from to get here to the studio, it's still a bit of a trek. So I was bringing bags with me, or if I had to stay up for a few nights, I was trying to lug all my stuff across, and unfortunately, it always has been easier for me to drive up here, because it doesn't bring you to the heart of the city. It brings you to the outskirts of the city, and then you have to get into the heart of the city. So hopefully this will make it much easier, where the likes of those of us who live outside of Dublin can get into the city centre and just make it just plain sailing really for everyone, and that you can actually get around freer.
It's pretty there isn't a little ferry, isn't there? Like a little up the Liffey ferry, wouldn't you know?
Oh, like the Thames.
Kind of, why not? Yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking Paris. But yes, like, you know, because the Liffey is right at the gate of the doors of Houston, and I don't know how low the bridges are.
I think, is there an issue with it being tidal that sometimes...
Oh, maybe.
If we could work it for the tides, it'd be fun.
Look, that's it. You know, the tides are relatively predictable.
A hovercraft, perhaps.
It would actually be quite enjoyable if you think about it. The only thing is, my problem is always is the suitcases and the bags. But I think once you, like...
You mean
had
the ones that people have thrown into the Liffey or your own?
But you know what actually happened to me a couple of years ago, I think now? So I stand corrected. But I, again, was travelling a lot and I had bags. And I went to Houston. And I was like, oh, where's your bag drop? And they're like, we don't have one. And I was like, surely there must be, because
there's no lockers, there's nothing.
No, so there's a kind of a hostel out across the road to the left, and then you have to kind of book in with them and you leave your bag there. Now maybe that's changed since, but I remember at the time thinking, and it wasn't that long ago, this doesn't make sense, because surely like that, if I'm coming up to the city, can I leave my bags here while I run and do all my jobs and then come back?
Tourist cities, I mean, Dublin is full of tourists, always need places to leave bags. Like if you go to a lot of European cities, in fact, if you walk around somewhere like Barcelona, there's actually just lockers. You can go into a little, they look like laundrettes almost, but you go in and it's just full of lockers. And so it means if you're between accommodations or whatever, just put yourselves, your bags somewhere. And I don't know why we don't have more of that here.
Yeah, and as I said, maybe it's been changed since, but if it has, that's definitely in recent years, or else they just didn't want to take my bags. I'm not 100% sure, but I just remember thinking...
It is interesting what you're saying, though, because we often talk about, you know, building public transport infrastructure to support like residential areas or to expand residential areas or whatever. But building around public transport hubs is probably a really good way of, they already exist. And that probably is a really, because we have to be prioritising the movement of people on public transport, don't we now, in a real way?
Because anytime I have gotten the train from Houston back west, you know, it's obviously so busy for the first few stops because all the commuters coming and going. And you just have to kind of think, why isn't there more trains for the likes of those people? Or, you know, I suppose we look at it, a lot of people are buying further and further away from Dublin. And, you know, they want to be able to just jump on a train and get into the city centre as quick as they can, because there's obviously a lot of returning to office as well for even more days a week than usual. So I think everyone is kind of getting back into here. So I think it should be, just should be as simple as possible.
We're going to take a short break and we're going to get the news headlines, because it's just after 6:30. And you are very welcome back to Winners and Sinners, where I am joined by Ger Gilroy from Off the Ball and Megan Scully, host of the 28 Ways to Save the World podcast. Guys, what are your, we'll go to you first, Megan, your sinner this week?
Oh, well, I kind of had a few, but one of them is definitely the cost of living and diesel prices. Now, I know we just spoke about public transport and I am trying to be as good as I can. And to be fair, when I am staying up in Dublin, I don't get to see my car too often, which is a good thing. I sometimes have to go out and turn on the engine to make sure it's still starting. I do still have a diesel car because I am not in a position to upgrade yet. I would love to have an electric car. I'd love to be able to have like to have that accessibility, but I just don't. And also, when you're like my house at home, my home house in Galway doesn't have a charging point, so my village doesn't either, for that matter. So at the moment, it's not something I can do. So therefore, I do have to drive my diesel car. I've always been a 50 euro petrol
station.
That's
what you lash into the car.
Doesn't matter what's in the tank. It's always 50. It's always been my go-to. And I don't know what it is about it, but I just always found 50 was my number. And it was only there the other week. I had to drive out to actually Fairy House for the launch of the Easter Festival. And I had to stop and I put in my 50. And then next I looked and I was like, that barely made a dint. It was like, it only moved up like one or two bars. And my family would ask me, what's the price of the petrol and diesel in Dublin? And I never actually pay attention. I just put my 50 in all the time. Well, I know now, because I saw the difference it made, and I just thought, wow, it's just kind of scary to see. Now, I know there's an argument around we should all be moving to electrical anyway, so we should be kind of not.
Yeah, but that's definitely the long term goal, but that doesn't affect the here and now for people who don't have electric.
This is it.
We are hearing anecdotally on the text line the whole time from people that, you know, the way the prices rocketed within about 10 hours of a missile being fired into Iran. They aren't coming down with the same alacrity.
No, it's funny, isn't it?
Yes, it is funny, isn't it?
It doesn't have to come down.
I wonder why. Yeah, I don't know. What do you make of this, Ger?
I think it's obviously an incredibly complicated global situation. But when it starts to bite locally, everybody thinks, okay, well, now we're all paying attention to see what Trump's off-ramp is in Iran. And, you know, there's just a drumbeat of bad news.
I don't think Trump knows what Trump's off-ramp. I mean, what did we get? Another 10 days of well, I'll give you a little bit longer for the deal that you're begging for. You know, it doesn't add up what is being said.
All the stuff they claim to have done that hasn't actually happened, that they haven't done. So I can't see the diesel prices coming down anytime soon. Like, obviously, the cut in excise duties is an important step by the government and they are doing stuff. It is just hard to square away the lobby groups telling us that, you know, it's really, we were able to do that really quickly because we ran out of stuff that we had storage of, but now the price hasn't come down.
Yeah, and you know, we can't speak for the whole of the nation, but genuinely all the time the texts are coming in saying one petrol station I have seen the prices come down, all of the rest of them are the same. And we know that there's been fluctuations, major fluctuations in the price of diesel and petrol, some of which have been with downward pressure because of various actions that, you know, governments, etc., have taken. It does always seem that prices seem to be more sensitive to going up than going down, doesn't it?
This is it, yeah.
Can we not regulate this? Like, can we not just have somebody whose job it is to go, hang on a second, you guys all have very similar prices right beside each other there. What's the story with that, lads?
The consumer protection agencies and the anti-competitive people say that they do regulate this and they're not allowed to operate in that manner.
Yeah. Are they resourced enough, I wonder? I think it goes back to the point about the social media stuff. We decided not to regulate those social media companies because we got hooked on the corporation tax. And that was a mistake. So maybe we can reverse out of that and actually investigate and just make sure that what they say, what they're telling us through their spokespeople is accurate.
It is actually interesting, though, because this week another one of the stories about the cost of living was the price war between supermarkets, the dairy being cut. But I noticed that they were all cut to the exact same thing. All the pounds of butter went to £2.99, all of them. Mm. All the 2 litres of milk went to £2.25. You'd have to question, is that competition too? Do you know what I mean? When they all land at the exact same price point, are they, is there, you know, I'm not saying that they're colluding with one another. They don't have to. They can go in and look in each other's shops.
Yeah.
But it's not true competition. They're only matching each other. They're still, it's still the consumer is kind of grist to this mill, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes.
It is. It's still us that it's affecting. And it's like you mentioned there with the, even with the fuel and like the talk about the price going down. Like I actually the last day said I wouldn't put in my 50 because I'd wait and see if it did go down at midnight, which it didn't. So I still had to put my 50 in. But even I've noticed now as a single person shopping for myself each week that my groceries have just shot up. And
I know.
Trying to shop around and I have all my little cards on my phone and I'm tapping everything. And I actually now find that I'm trying, like I work, you know, full time. And I still find I'm going into the supermarket going, what deal can I get? Because it's kind of going, you know, the affordability of everything now. And it's actually having to really now look at things. I shouldn't have to. I should be able to, I work full time. I should be comfortably allowed to go in and just buy my groceries, but I can't.
We had a financial expert earlier on in the show this evening and he was giving us advice on how to save money because everything is getting more expensive. And it included things like, and I was very interested, growing your own vegetables. Mm. Because for a long time in my life, I would have seen people growing vegetables as kind of a hobby, right? They like a bit of gardening, so they go out and they put in their tomato seeds or their little things to make carrots or whatever they do. And it was kind of a night, it was kind of a like a like a, you know, like allotment. It's kind of a hobby. But could we envisage a time when we're moving back to providing ourselves with food as a means to survive and budget and all of that sort of stuff? Because, you know, we've taken for granted to some extent, particularly in Ireland, since maybe the 90s, the wealth in the country kind of changed in the 90s and it moved into the kind of became mad and the Celtic Tiger and all of that. But I remember the 70s and 80s pretty clearly and we were mostly pretty broke as a country. And your parents had no money. And if you, like, I remember my mother would put the shopping in the fridge. She did the big weekly shop and she put it in the fridge the day she came in. And if you ate too much of it, there would be kind of ructions. She'd come down and she would roar at us. Who ate all the ham? Was a kind of an expression.
Oh, yeah.
Because that ham was supposed to last all of us for the week.
Yeah.
And if it all went on the first day, well, then what were you having for your lunches? Kind of thing for school and all that sort of stuff. And we kind of forgot all of that for a while. But I'm kind of, do we think it's coming back?
Yeah, I think, there's a good side of that where we actually remember how to make ends meet and make our own bread.
And be maybe a bit more sustainable.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there's no harm in that. Like, I don't know how much land you would need to be able to grow all your own food for the year. You know, certainly when Merino was designed by the Germans, there was like big back gardens for everybody so that there would be enough for you to have a vegetable patch and something else growing. Obviously, people living in apartments, it's like, you know, you can have a window box.
The herbs.
Eamon Ryan got
in
trouble?
Oh, yeah, lettuce on the back window.
Yeah. Is that what we're
poor at? Lettuce. Poor lettuce. Poor Eamon. Do you remember at the same time as he wanted us to grow lettuce on a south-facing windowsill, he also wanted to bring back wolves. And I actually have huge time for Eamon Ryan. I like him very much. But he says things, you know, because he comes from an interesting perspective that he's thought things through, but he gets absolutely slammed for it, doesn't he?
I'd love to. I'd bring back the wolves. Let's see what happens. Wolves. The farmers will shoot them in about 2 days.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Right.
Jerry, you're a sinner.
Look, the football.
Oh.
I mean, there's no sinner here. Obviously, some players made some mistakes, but I think slaughtering them in the aftermath of the heartbreak.
And it was heartbreaking, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because we were so good and we were 2-0 up, you can probably hear it, my voice. I was at the game and there was just a period where it was still 2-1. You know, it's 45, 47, 50 minutes in. You're like, you just need to get through these 10 minutes. And we got through them. And you're like, okay. And then the crowd, the Irish crowd, which were absolutely amazing, just went into this medley of all the classic Irish stuff. not a huge Wolf Tones fan, not going to lie. But when it starts to echo around the stadium and the players
especially
can feel
it. Especially because there wasn't that many in the stadium. I mean, proportionally, there wasn't that many in the
it's
stadium.
It's like a 20,000 capacity and loads of Irish people had taken over. And we did hear stories like just before kickoff that a load of tickets had been cancelled. So there were empty seats, which I think had been Irish people buying tickets in the away side and then putting their own address in. But there was this mad movement of Irish people who were in Prague, who were having the crack for days in advance and writing their own version of Italia 90 and those stories. Yeah. And the football team had become totally unified in the aftermath of Troy Parrott's hat-trick with the country. Like, people who don't care about the match were talking about the match not just in the hour beforehand, but kind of all week.
I was in a restaurant during the match because I had something that I had to go to and I couldn't put off. So, but I had my phone, and I'm not the maddest football fan. I had my phone out with the match live on the chair beside me and I was glancing down and I was following the score and then I just had, was glued to it for the end. I mean, all of that. But so, yes, I think it we kind of did dare to hope, didn't we? Dare to dream.
Yeah, and that's why it's the hope that kills you, Kira.
I know, it is the hope that kills you. And I don't think there's any synergy. You could see the devastation for the team at the end. Yeah. And you know, and that moment where Kevin Kelleher saved the third penalty, I think it was by the Czech guy. Like, I was in a restaurant and I did a big shriek really loudly and there was no, and I was like, ah, like this, like I couldn't help it. I was like, oh my God, this is it. And of course it wasn't, but we wanted it.
I think World Cups really matter. Like, we've only been to three in our entire history as a country. And this was, you know, these playoffs happen every 4 years. And, the Thierry Henry thing was a World Cup playoff. There was another one in Dublin where we lost 5-1, but we were up 1-0 after 10 minutes and the atmosphere was class. But last night, it actually had lasted and we had been excellent in the first half in a way that we haven't been. So, it does feel like I hope it's the birth of a new team, except that there's a good time coming, be it ever so far away. You want it now.
I was in here last night with the off-the-ball team for it and I had walked back through the city and it was the most unusual walk I've had, and everyone was just so deflated. Everyone was just coming out of all the pubs, and you could just
town was
sorrow.
Buzzing beforehand because I came out of work at 7 o'clock in the evening, and there was a buzz around town. Like, Thursday evening is always a little bit lively, but you could feel it. There was a sense of expectation. Oh, yeah. There was an energy. People were. It was different.
Yes.
That's it, exactly.
The smell of want.
Yeah. And then even just walking back, I could everyone was having conversations and everyone, you could just hear everyone going, I can't believe it. I'm so disappointed. I'm so sad. I'm just so, and everyone was, it was like this.
It was real. Like, I don't know, I don't want to call it grief or whatever. I don't know what the term would be for
it. I know, it is grief.
But there was a real sense of loss.
Yeah.
Collectively, I suppose.
Well, so the team is really young and they've been formed through like a really difficult period over the last number of years. And this is them finally stepping forward. Now, there will be the Euros in Dublin in 2 years' time and they're not done. They're still really young. The age profile is great. It's just that there's like a massive shot in the arm if you qualify for a World Cup.
Yeah. We're going to have to take a short break, but we will be back in just a moment with more winners and sinners.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3. 1-0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff.
And you're all welcome back to The Hard Shoulder, where Ger and Megan are still with us. Ger, what else do you want to talk about today?
Read my lip, no new taxes except for tourists. So the government are being urged to allow Dublin councils to charge tourist tax. And I've been talking about directly elected Lord Mayor for Dublin. I know the one in Limerick, controversial, and there are issues around that, but if we had proper local government, then I think that we would, a long time ago, have had that tunnel between the two train stations working. There would be planning. Like, Shane's not here to, but, like, I agree.
He does love a good plan.
Like, any plan would be good. Just any plan.
A plan
exactly.
At all.
Exactly. Let's at least commit to making a plan. I don't need it today, but I do think that, like, a tourist tax, every city I go to now, and any Airbnb you get, there's like, they just take £3. And you're like, why is this? Why I didn't know about this until the last couple of years.
Because the argument against this is, oh, it'll put people off. Do you even notice? And I don't mean notice because you've got so much money, but it's sort of an afterthought. So, like, it wouldn't change your plans, would
it? Well, you just, it's generally you need cash. It's like, and it's £3 a night.
That's the only really annoying thing about it.
Exactly. But it would, compared to the 200 euros that you're spending on accommodation, say ours is a family of five, so it's like it's never anything less than that. The £3, no, absolutely, get it in. And it's like they're saying it could be 17 million for the city. Ring fence that, pay planners to reduce traffic, reduce smog, make it a better place to come. I just think that, I think that all of our cities would benefit from something like this, that a more powerful local government with very talented people who are committed to living locally and getting on the bus and seeing what it's like, as opposed to politicians who aren't actually resident.
It seems to me that the reason that the Limerick thing has become something of a quagmire is the design of it, that if you do create local government, local government has to have power.
Yeah.
And the directly elected mayor scenario that we're currently looking at, there seems to be a little bit of a power struggle. I don't want to be dramatic about it. I'm not blaming anyone for that or anything, but that maybe the design of local government didn't match the expectation of local government. And in order for it to be functional, it has to have powers that, that have been devolved to it so it can actually achieve things. Otherwise, it's just a titular head and it's kind of a nonsense.
Yeah. I'd say power and budget is the thing that almost gives you the power. It's like if we had the money to be able to do this thing, then we have the power to go and do it.
And are you saying that you think part of the budget could be that 17 million?
Well, look, whatever we need to do to raise the money, and if this is a relatively straightforward, you don't want to gouge tourists because obviously hotel prices are obviously massively inflated in Ireland.
It's the price of, it's not even the price of one coffee per person per day.
I agree. I think that...
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, I've certainly paid it abroad and I haven't flinched. I kind of go, oh, that's how it is. And because it's relatively few coppers, it's not that much of a deal. Would you be put off in any way, Megan, by it?
No, as you mentioned, anytime I go abroad, it's just, I'm like, oh yeah, grand, that's the tourist act. Oh yeah, there you go. Just here, hand it over. And
the biggest inconvenience is trying to come up with the cash, isn't it? The actual hard cash.
I'm good for a bit of cash now.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm good for cash.
Totally brutal.
My it's always kind of a bit of a running joke with me and my friends and I, because I'm always the one that has the cash. Or so sometimes I only got a Leap card recently, but before that I used to have my €2.
Did you?
I still save them just in case. So I had a friend up visiting recently and I handed her €2. I said, there you go, that's for the bus now. And she's like, thanks very much. So I always have the €2 ready because, you know, because most people don't have it.
No, I don't have it. I went to buy one of the daffodils last week for, you know, Daffodil Day, and then I realised I didn't have any money. But the good people of the Irish Cancer Society,
they were taking taps.
You could tap. Because I went, oh, I want, oh, and then I was like, oh no. And they're like, you're all right. And I was like, okay, cool. What would you like to talk about, Megan?
Yeah, this is kind of a story now that I just kind of give, my skin was kind of crawling. Donald Trump was on with Fox News and the anchor was talking about what is happening over in Iran and how upsetting it is and how, just to actually quote a few, their government treats them terribly, killed tens of thousands of them in January. Do you have any insight as to how they're doing? Do they even have drinking water? Do they have food? It's very upsetting. And he said, I do. And he said, but first, he said, remember when we had lunch years ago in the base of Trump Tower when it was a brand new building? And then Perino said, it was a long time ago. And he said, you haven't changed. And he added, I'm not allowed to say this, it's the end of my political career, but you may be even better looking, okay? So I don't know what you're doing. And he just turned it all into her looks, which, as we know, as females in
could
media,
you be more shallow? Could, like, a puddle would have more depth. And I think I'm being kind when I describe it as shallowness as opposed to crassness, misogyny and all the other things that, of course, it is as well.
And I just found it quite triggering. It's like, you know, here she is doing her job asking about something that's very serious, that's affecting the whole world and affecting all of us here in Ireland as well, you know, because we're dealing with the ramifications as well. And then he turns into her looks.
Yeah.
And then
it's very diminishing of her as a professional, isn't it? That I'm not interested in what you have to say. I'm not interested in what you're asking me. It's also very telling. I'm not interested in the issue, but you're a woman, so I'll comment on your appearance. Like,
And then, of course, then it made headlines because people now are talking about it. So it's kind of, you know, and I think that's obviously he just, you know, was like just deflected from it. I just found it. I was like, in this day and age, I was like, you know, we've spent so long trying to kind of be.
I know you say in this media day and age, but do you ever have the feeling that perhaps this day and age isn't quite as good as we might have said this day and age was 5 years ago or 10, like
true.
Are we going backwards? I sometimes think we are.
I know, and then I suppose you think to the manosphere and the whole, that generation that are kind of driving all of that as well, and it is kind of creating this misogynistic society, and there are people who are on that bandwagon.
But if you look at Iran, if you mention Iran, Iranian women in the 70s looked just like women here. They had knee skirts on. They were sitting outside with their hair uncovered, drinking coffee and chatting to their friends. They looked exactly as we did. And then there was the Islamic Revolution in 1979. And you might argue that the Shah was imperfect and all that. Park that for one moment. In terms of women, what happened to their rights after that? They were literally trampled all over, and they are today. Do you have a view on it, Jer?
Yeah, the separation of church and state in America has essentially been totally eroded. And I suppose it seems like one of the things you might be suggesting is that we should be bloody careful about not going back, because how easy it is for something.
I do think that we think naively maybe that rights only move in one direction. We get more and more liberal and more democratic and more. Autocracy lurks in the wings at all times. Look around us. Look at Russia. Look at Iran. Look at America.
So why is Trump getting away with this stuff, though? Why do you think that this is now acceptable, Maria? Right, it is acceptable in that he has got away with this, and there are literally no repercussions for it.
It's because we almost nearly expect it now because of what he's created, that when he says something it doesn't really overly shock us because it's Trump.
He did say he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and nobody would do a thing.
Mm.
And sometimes I wonder. Unfortunately, on that cheerful note, we're going to have to leave it here tonight for Winners and Sinners. My thanks, as ever, to Ger Gilroy from Off the Ball, and also to Megan Scully, from the host of the 28 Ways to Save the World podcast. But that is our lot for the entire evening. That was the week that was. Thank you so much for listening to The Hard Shoulder. Myself and Shane will be back on the airways 4 o'clock Monday. Have a fantastic weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.